Welcome back to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kaustu. Well, for this week on Future Affairs, for our Merdeka Month specials, we look at rice and national food security. Rice is, of course, a staple food among Malaysians and one of the most important food crops in the country. In fact, rice consumption reached around 2.9 million tonnes in 2022. Whereas in 2021, Malaysia produced approximately 1.68 million tonnes of rice, an increase of around 180,000 tonnes compared to production volume in the previous year. The Malaysian government is also planning to increase local rice production and supply so that it reaches 75% of the country's total consumption by 2025. This is due to the fact that despite increases, current rice production volume of rice does not satisfy demand in the Malaysian market. FYI, around 30% of market demand is supplied via imported rice, which makes Malaysia a net importer of rice. How can this dependency on imported rice be reduced to increase food security, especially in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and volatile global geopolitics disrupting supply chains? Well, Emmy Farha Alias, president of the Malaysian Agroecology Society for Sustainable Resource Intensification, SRIMAS, joined me to discuss rice and national food security. Let's watch.
Hi, Puan Emmy. Thank you so much for joining us on Niaga Spotlight. How are you doing today?
Hello and hi. Thank you very much for inviting us. I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Sure. So let's get started off with the discussion on rice and national food security. Emmy, now Malaysians consume an average of 82.3 kilos of rice per person annually. So how can our current rate of rice production keep up with this growing demand as an estimated additional 45,000 tons of rice are required each year to keep up with our current per capita consumption?
Okay, I think before we talk about supply and demand, so we need to understand the whole food system first. In our view, agroecology for food security or the food system comprises of six elements, which is we can call it 4A and 2S. The 4A is availability, accessibility, affordability, acceptability, and the 2S consists of stability and sustainability. We also incorporate in the food system, food loss and food waste. So as we can see here in Malaysia, research done by Mardi in 2015, the post-harvest losses during the production is about 28.5%, which is closely to 30%. So if we can use the best practices during harvesting, transporting, milling, and also storing, so it can reduce the losses. So, for example, we take into account the current promotion for small harvester. It can minimize the losses during the harvesting season about 2 to 5%. So the other point is the food waste. So we dump about 4 tons of edible food. So if we can reduce the food waste here, so we can also meet the, if we can reduce the net consumptions, so in other words, we can also meet the net production.
Thank you for pointing out that we're losing almost 30% of the available crop due to, of course, post-harvest losses. Very important area to work on. Moving along, Emmy, now, what are some of the restraints in SRIMAS's opinion on the impact of the Malaysian rice industry? Are there any particular lessons we learned from the rice crisis which happened in 2008 that perhaps could be helpful to us now?
Yeah, actually we can see here during the food crisis in 2008, we can saw that the food price or especially the rice price is going up because we cannot control the price, the world price. We are price taker. So in other words, to import the rice during the crisis is become a burden for the Malaysia and for us as a taxpayer. So I think when we do have the crisis, so we change our view, we need to go for 100% self-sufficiency of rice. So in other words, we need to change the practices in the farm. So as we can see now, the soil quality is decreasing and also the yield is plateaued. So due to the high dependency on chemical input, so we need to change the cultivation approach towards agroecology. And the most important lesson during the crisis is monopoly doesn't help us with rice security, which is no guarantee for us as consumers to get a very quality of rice with affordable price.
That's right. But there have also, of course, been some concerns about if the rice monopoly is broken, it could backfire on farmers' welfare. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Of course, it can also backfire to the farmers also. So for example, if here we can say that farmers doesn't have any choice. So no matter what, they need to depend on the Bernas. For example, we can so the monopoly Bernas will buy all the paddy produced by the farmers. So it's because it's really monopolized. So we can say that almost two decades of monopolized. So the farmers doesn't have any choice where they want to sell their produce or their rice.
That's right. Now, moving along from there, let's look at, of course, the importing of rice, Emmy. Now, the government also aims to establish a long-term contract with countries to import rice with agreements to export palm oil products in return. However, one of our main markets, India, imposing a ban on July 20th onwards on the export of non-basmati white rice, it is shooting up prices. So does this remain a viable approach in Srimas's opinion?
I think we can, in our opinion, that trade negotiation will, of course, will affect the food security. So Malaysia need to be very smart in terms of trade negotiation. So we sacrifice a lot to the oil palm. So we sacrifice in terms of land. So we only have 10% of the land used for the food production. So I think it's not a very intelligent trade negotiation. So rice is national security for Malaysia. So I think we cannot include rice in any trade negotiation because we need rice. Rice is our staple food. So no matter how come we want to negotiate, we can use another commodity that we need to have competitive advantage. Yeah. Mm.
Thank you for sharing that. Moving along from there, since July, rice prices in Asia also have soared to their highest levels in more than 2 years. And of course, this is related to concerns that El Nino and dry weather will damage crops. Emmy, how can Malaysia respond to ensure our local rice production and consumption needs are safeguarded? We're looking at global boiling, no longer just global warming, right? And also heatflation.
Yeah, to address this question, actually, we need to go towards the production cost, the cost of production. Yet, of course, the first thing we need to equip our farmers with the knowledge first. So with the knowledge, we can try to address the farmers to use the climate resilient approach or practices. So here that we're in case of the climate, so we need to adapt to the climate change, and also the mitigation is also very, very important. So here we can say that if the farmers is adapt to the climate, so the farmers itself with the equipped knowledge, with a certain knowledge level, so the farmers can also change or very sensitive or change their practices. So for example here, let's sure. say if the monsoon season is changing, the monsoon season is changing, for example, from October to November. So the farmers need to think when is the best time to plant the rice, the paddy. And the other way is that the I think the current issue is about to cultivate rice or paddy 5 times in 2 years. And it's not recommended actually to have to have this type of practices to cultivate 5 times of rice or paddy in 2 years. And also the Mardi also is not recommending these practices.
Yes, that would of course lead to soil quality degradation. So digging deeper in the same issue, Emmy, so how can we close some of the efficiency gaps between rice smallholders and the estate sector, all the way, of course, from the critical labor force shortage that we are seeing to a lack of modern farming machines?
I think the first, the very important point is we need to change our mindset. So as we can see, it's already proven that economic of scale is not proven to be successful implemented in Malaysia. So we can see that previously we are promoting or we are doing the Northern Corridor in the and doing also the estate, but it's not proven successful yet. So I think the upscaling the small farmers is important here. So if we empower the smallholder or the small farmer, so in return, as a result, so we can build the local economy and also we can also shorten the supply chain. So in the view of the food system through ecology, we emphasize that the community involvement is really important, which can give us high efficiency food supply with the and together with the shortened supply chain. And also we can see here also with the minimum fair salary for Malaysian is also important to encourage local or Malaysian to participate in agriculture. So in other words, it can reduce our dependency on the foreign worker. So we don't know how much is the fair salary or fair wages. So we need to define and do research to determine that.
That's right. And perhaps would another pivotal step, Emmy, involve shifting from input subsidies to output-based incentives? Looking at how, of course, the present subsidy model for our rice and paddy farmers is rather outdated.
Yeah. I could say that the input subsidy, the current system is no matter where you plant or you cultivate the rice, you are given the same amount, the same fertilizer. Actually, you need to customize. So each area doesn't need exactly the same fertilizer. So I think it's the best approach is to moving towards to the output-based subsidy. So the farmers have the decision or the power to make a decision what is good to their cultivation practices.
Now, moving into another very interesting discussion area when it comes to rice and food security, Emmy, let's talk about heirloom rice. Can you start by defining for us what heirloom rice means? And is there a way to have this done ethically and sustainably across Malaysia, especially Sabah, Sarawak, where rice self-sufficiency is still below 60%?
Okay, heirloom rice is a special kind of indigenous rice that has been planted by the ancestor in Sabah and Sarawak. We do have heirloom rice in Sabah and Sarawak. It is colored glutinous rice that boasts outstanding quality, aroma, and also texture, taste, and also do have a very nutritional value. Okay, in terms of the ethic of the heirloom rice production, we can't do the same approach as the conventional system, because the heirloom rice production is very cultural and traditional. So we must respect the heirloom rice production. So it for us, we can't commercialize the heirloom rice production. And I think we need to respect their belief or their culture or their traditional way of doing or cultivate the heirloom rice production.
Right. Well noted on that. Now, it's also quite interesting that there has been a 200 million allocation for technological enhancements facilitated through Agrobank and also, of course, focusing on the rice industry. Moving along from there, one final area of discussion that I would love for you to touch on, Emmy, can ASEAN or even regional cooperation, especially between key rice producers like Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, even Laos, ensure rice supply for our regional food security in Nusantara especially?
Okay, actually, we do have the Asian Plus 3 Emergency Rice Reserve. So we do have a stockpile, but we need to manage our own stockpile. We do have an agreement for that. So I think even though we do have the rice reserve under the Asian agreement, so I think we need to focus or need to we cannot depend solely on the rice for the calorie need. So we need to think about dietary needs. So we need to diversify our calorie with other sources. For example, corn, and also corn and do what other food produce of fresh produce that we do have locally cultivate. So for example, here that we can see that the wheat-based production is also not secure. We can see that the wheat production is threatened, and also the price of wheat also is going up. So here that we need to find some alternative to diversify or to replace the rice. Maybe we can change to try to change our consumption or dependency of the rice towards the what we call it, like ubi, something like that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so very much, Emmy. That was super insightful. Appreciate your making time to join us on Niaga Spotlight. That was Emmy Farha Alias, President of the Malaysian Agroecology Society for Sustainable Resource Intensification, or SRIMAS. Well, this has been Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. We'll see you next Friday with more business analysis and insights. Here's to a productive week ahead.